Welcome to the Rhode Island Liberty Report, your source for libertarian commentary on current events in the Ocean State and Southern New England. Coming to you from Rothbard Studios, here are your hosts, Mike and Eric.
Welcome to the Rhode Island Liberty Report from LibertyRI.com. I'm Mike, and in the studio with me, as always, my co-host Eric.
How's everybody doing out there in electronic Liberty Land?
Isn't that a show? That's another podcast.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. It is. Yeah, that's right. Okay. Never mind.
we get sued for copyright.
Oh, geez.
A cease and desist.
I screwed it up again.
Cease and desist.
How you doing, Mike?
Good, good, good. We've had a little bit of a break here. So,
it's good to be back in the studio.
Yeah, yeah.
So much going on, so much to talk about. Like, it's just, you know, obviously, and first off the bat, obviously, this is our first show since the special election.
Yeah, yeah. Before we dive into that, I just want a couple of housekeeping things.
Oh, so, very important.
Just as we're recording this, last night I posted a previous podcast we recorded a couple weeks back, which kind of plays into what we're going to talk about first. We also switched podcast hosting providers. We were using a thing for the geeks out there, Libsyn, and I've switched to Blueberry. I've used Blueberry for many, many years, and I wanted to try Libsyn out to see if I would like it. I did not like it at all, so I switched over. But that did cause some technical issues, so everything's propagating and getting resynced back up. So if you notice something screwy with your podcast host provider, that could be the reason, but give it a day or two, and it should, by the time that we publish this, that should be all sorted. So, but the reason why we had such a long break, I personally, and Eric to a degree were, pretty heavily involved in the campaign going on in District 68. And that kind of set us back, obviously priorities, right? So, we'll talk about that a little bit. Obviously it didn't turn out the way we had hoped as libertarians. Just a disclosure there. We don't speak on behalf of the Libertarian Party of Rhode Island. We just
not at all. Not on this show.
Yeah, not here. There's a separate entity, if you will. But we did help Bill, and it didn't turn out the way we had hoped. Getting a liberty loving representative up at the state house, and we got stuck with a liberty hating communist or progressive
or a socialist. Yeah, and if as if those things aren't bad enough, a trained, experienced political scientist, which if you saw June Speakman, the rep Speakman, I guess I'll try to be respectful here and refer to her as Rep Speakman. She is the representative for District 68.
I'm still gonna call her a commie.
Me too. the commie, she was on Dan York's show. If any of you out there who watched Dan York's show on, it's available on YouTube. It's on, I think, MyRITV or whatever. Yeah. There was certainly a lot there in that conversation that was worth noting. But the thing that really stood out to me was, this notion that, and Dan sort of propagated this idea that because she's a political scientist and she's a political science professor, that this makes her more qualified to be a representative or to be in government. And all it says to me is this is someone who knows how to play the game. The whole idea of political science is the science behind politics. I mean, and what is politics? Politics is figuring out how to, work things in such a way that you get the maximum support that you can without pissing off, to avoid pissing off as many people as you can at the same time. So it's being very calculated about what you say, what positions you take, the way that you present them. Everything's very calculated for maximum political gain. That is political science. And it showed in this interview. And the thing that was most glaring to me was that at the very end, Dan asked her, what is your big issue? Do you have a big issue? And she said, no. Okay, well, for those of us who are following the campaign, in every single debate she was in, her big issue was bringing back funds to the district for education, right? Was bringing back more money to the school district that had lost money in some of the more recent formulas that they had calculated or whatever. And this was a constant thing that she kept saying to the voters. So when he pressed her on this a little bit further, what are your priorities? She said, affordable housing, which I just thought was telling. This is not something that she brought up a lot at all during any of the debates, or at least in a lot of her materials. It is something she worked on a lot, I guess, in Barrington, was this affordable housing. So it should have been staring us right in the face. But it's just the idea that, I mean, again, this that political science calculating, like, I'm going to say the thing that is politically popular, that people care most about, so that I can get the most votes. And then when I get in, I'm going to do whatever I think is the most important or what I really want to do. So, I mean, that, you know, that's frustrating. And I hope the people who live in District 68, you know, keep an eye on things. And, you know, look, if you feel like you're not being well represented, then get out there and vote for someone who will represent you in the way that you really want them to.
Yeah. No, and you know, a couple of interesting things during the campaign that came out that, and I'm not going to go too deep in the weeds on this. I'm hoping to get Bill into the studio for a bonus episode so we can kind of go in depth on that. But you know, you're talking about the issues, and obviously gun control is a huge issue for her, which we'll talk about later tonight. The abortion issue, which was big, actually, because that was right at the peak of the legislation being introduced and on the you know, and voted on it at the at the state house. So that became an issue with a lot of voters. You know, the whole something that was interesting that came out was the dodging the label progressive that we recognized during the campaign. You know, especially after the debate that they had at the Bristol State House. There were several people that, you know, were asked, are you a progressive? And they would deny it.
Right.
They would say, I'm a Democrat. They do not want the label. They're running from the label, right, which I thought was interesting. Discovery, I guess. But it was also funny on Dan York's show where she called herself a progressive. Now that she's elected, she took on that label, which I thought is interesting. Maybe they're not trying to hide. I don't know what they're. I think that's in flux at this point, right? The whole label. But it went from proud to be a liberal to now I'm a progressive. Now a progressive is getting potentially tarnished, and now they're moving on to something else. No, they're just saying they're Democrats, you know, they're
right. Well, she said that in the interview too, right? When she first answered the question, when he asked, what club are you in? She's like, well, I'm a Democrat and I follow the Democratic platform and blah, 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 blah. And then she's like, well, people have labeled me progressive, and that's a label I don't disagree with.
Yeah.
Oh, did you really have to go through that whole rigmarole just to say you could have just said you're a progressive. The word salad and the nuance she tries to throw into it is just so, like, it's just so grossly political.
So something else that I thought was interesting in this campaign, again, like I said, I hope to get into it deeper with Bill, is that this campaign was, so we had Loftin's campaign, which we talked about several months back. This campaign was delete Loftin Asensio, insert June Speakman. Everybody that was around him were the same people that were around her.
That's right.
Down to the point of Loftin's treasurer, the guy that was in charge of the finances for his campaign, was a very active volunteer on Speakman's campaign. So all this stuff was coming into us, you know, all these discoveries and research that people were doing, research where, I believe his name was Hasselhurst, her campaign manager, worked with, Aaron, Hale. I forget his last name. He's got a hyphenated last name, but they worked together in another pack where they were paid thousands of dollars. Hasselhurst was paid thousands of dollars by Donovan, Coyne, and I believe it was Ewer on their campaigns in the 2018 general election. Like, these people are making tons of money off of these campaigns. And I almost speculate, well, the other interesting aspect of it was she started with roughly a $380 in her campaign account, right? Right before right at the end of her losing her city, town council race in Warren. So within 5 to 6 weeks, that campaign finance account went from $380 to $24,000, I believe it was. Like, it's almost, you know, circle the wagons, money flows in, it, you know, get up and running and off to the races.
Yep.
It's a machine.
It's an absolute machine. And it's all these packs that are, you know, there's so many, there's a new pack new liberal progressive PAC that's popping up every other week. And you see them on social media. And yeah, it's just, you know, and then it's funny. It's all these quote unquote reformers. Then they're, you know, they're hobnobbing with the likes of Governor Raimondo and Sheldon Whitehouse and all these establishment figures who, of course, are throwing huge chunks of money their way. The sitting Secretary of State who's overseeing the elections. I mean, the whole thing is so incestuous. And look, you know, I think it was, this was one of Billy's slogans sort of during the campaign, but it's really is true. And it sounds cliche, but you know, nothing is going to change unless you change something.
Right.
And, you know, I mean,
that was very true. That being said, Bill had a great showing, right?
Fantastic.
It was a four-way race. He beat the incumbent. Ken Marshall was an incumbent Democrat running as an independent to avoid a primary, obviously. Then there was the Jimmy McCanna guy who was just, he got a couple hundred votes. I think he just busted over 100 votes. But he, you know, and he made her work, you know, and she right. said that during her interview with York, like yeah. it was a hard fought campaign.
Billy,
he was out knocking on doors, you know, every opportunity he could get. Now, this being said, okay, so one of the criticisms, and again, I hope to Billy will expand on this at some point, is the endorsement from the Young Americans for Liberty. It's a national student-based liberty organization, right? They promote nonpartisan, they promote liberty-minded candidates. They've promoted Republicans, obviously libertarians, as well as Democrats. So it's philosophy based, I guess you could say. But they sent in people into the district, right? And they had students knocking on doors every day for multiple weeks. And there's money that's associated with that. And again, we won't get it. There was a lot of money. They spent a lot of money. But they were paying these kids to stay at a bed and breakfast, not a bed and breakfast, Airbnb.
Right.
And you know, there was expenses there. I mean,
right.
It's
an in-kind contribution, right. You know, and
so the criticism is, what about all that money? Well, yeah, we're getting money. So we're going to get into government and leave you alone.
Right.
Or it's like impose more government on you.
Right. Or it's like, it's a damned if you do, damned if you don't, right. if you don't raise any money and no one's spending money on you, you're not a serious candidate. If you raise the money, then all of a sudden you're some sort of a shill or something. You know, it's like, it's, you know, you can't please anybody.
And then the fact is, she raised, in the end, around $34,000, maybe more. We haven't seen the final campaign finance reports.
Right.
But how do you compete with that on $3,000 or $4,000 as a local rep?
You can't.
You cannot do. You need some kind of support.
You can't.
And as they demonstrated, their machine is well established, and it's a force to be reckoned with.
Well, again, I just want to say congratulations to Billy for a great showing. It really was. It shows that I think all the other races that libertarians have really run in recent years have been two-way races. And this really shows that we're not just some, you know, it's not just some third party that jumps in there, you know, in a two-way race and obviously is going to perform at a certain level with other candidates in the race and, you know, serious candidates in the race still coming in a strong second really does show how far you know the movement has come.
Yeah, and I joked with Bill. I said, "Well, I guess this is what it feels like to be the second party, right? Not the third party, because you came in second in a four-way race,
right?
So, no, it's great, and it shows that there's another viable option out there.
There is,
and it's interesting that the GOP. I heard some strategy talk today on the radio. I think it was Newberry called into Dan York. I can't stand Dan York, but unfortunately, we're talking about him a lot tonight. But and the GOP is realizing what their weaknesses are, and they talked some interesting strategy that was mentioned in that thing. But that's neither here nor there. Just I want to wrap this up with the final thing. She was appointed to two committees: the House Committee on Health, Education, and Welfare, as well as the House Oversight Committee. And Mattiello appointed her to those two positions. Funny, she was a big anti-Mattiello person, but she didn't turn down any appointments from him, I guess.
It's yeah, right.
So that being said, I guess we move on to our next, another person that's going to be, I guess, appointed here in the future. It seems to be anyway.
Right. Is this Angelica Infante Green, who has just been announced as the new education commissioner. You know, it's, or the education czar, you might want to call it, the position, replacing Ken Wagner, who, you know, coming off of the Rycast scores, just, I mean, he didn't stand a chance at surviving. And, you know, obviously there's a lot to dig in here on Miss Infante Green. She kind of came out of nowhere in the sense that nobody knew who the candidates were for this position. It was just sort of announced. You know, so there is a bit of scrambling here to see, find out who this person is who's going to be running, probably, which is probably the biggest government-run system in the entire state, which is education. It accounts for pretty much more than half of every local budget is education. So it's huge. And, you know, the one thing that really has stuck out that I've heard about her is this focus on equity. And I think there is an opportunity here for a larger conversation on equity and what that is and what does that mean in education? Because it's a new buzzword that's really floating around out there. And it's sort of, it's almost like being used as a replacement for equality, right? It's really, but what's the difference, right? And really what the difference is basically is equality is more or less treating everybody the same, right? In a sense, making sure that everyone's playing by the same rules, et cetera, et cetera. Equity is about making sure that everybody comes out achieving the same outcome. And when it comes to school, that's really, really disconcerting to me. Look, school is based on achievement. School is, a meritocracy. Whether you like it or not, you either learn something or you don't learn something. And if you don't learn something, then, you know, the idea that you should have the same outcome or the same grade or, you know, the same, you know, diploma as kids who did learn something, and there being no differentiation there between the two at all, is a problem. And I don't see how this is going to solve the test score issue. I don't see how it's going to solve the issue of the fact that, you know, 80% of the kids aren't learning the crap they're supposed to learn. Basic stuff, math, reading. They're not learning it now. And so I don't really see how this equity program, this approach is really going to help anything. It really comes down to, it starts in the home in a lot of ways. I think it starts there. It doesn't end there, certainly. It's a multifaceted system. Education doesn't just happen in schools, happens in the home. The parents need to make sure they're on top of stuff. Some kids don't have parents, right? Some kids don't, they have one parent who doesn't have the time to be helping them with their homework, right? These are the differences that kids have.
Mm-hmm.
Look, everyone's going to have different struggles they have to overcome. Some kids might have a single parent household, and that's what they have to overcome. Some kids might have a learning difference, but they have a two-parent household where the parents are really involved. But the learning difference is something they have to overcome, right? So to me, it's more important to try to teach kids how they can overcome their challenges as opposed to making them feel like victims of their circumstance and telling them that they're owed something because of it. And at the same time, almost making them feel like, well, you know, they can't succeed in some way, or that they're already starting well behind the starting line, and there's the system is out to get them, and it's such a backwards approach.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I a couple of things on my thoughts on it is I guess the first one being it's a senseless position. why do we need one person at the state level in charge of education? Again, public school aside, why is it not being handled at the community level? You know, each community knows what's best for its community. It knows its demographics. It knows its needs as far as workforce requirements or, what it needs, cultural differences between different communities and schools and whatnot. So the idea that one person in charge of everybody is going to fix everything is absolutely ridiculous.
It's totally ridiculous. Right.
It's just this idea that, it's that good government will fix the problem, right? We get that, right? It's not about, any person, it's the right person that's going to fix the problem until that person goes away and somebody else comes in and completely ruins it. Or, you know, it's just absurd, the idea that.
Right. Or let's say someone comes in and they come up with some ideas that, let's say they slap a Band-Aid on it. You know, maybe things start to look up for the next couple of years, you know, 3 or 4 years. But they're not fixes that are really going to solve things in the long term. They start to look pretty good. They leave. They go get a promotion, go working somewhere else. And then we're left with this, you know, crappy program that was really just sort of smoke and mirrors. I think the point you just brought up is an interesting one in terms of why do we need this position, right? And why do we need this top-down approach of one person setting the policy for everybody? And if you think about it, as the state and the feds, but you know, we're focusing locally here, as the state has been consolidating more and more power over education, part of the reason is this equity approach. They want all the districts to be equal, right? Not equal in terms of their right, equality in their right to run their district the way they want, but equal in the way that they approach education. The amount of state mandates that are levied on these communities is insane. And anybody on a school committee, any local school committee, will tell you that between contracts and state mandates, federal mandates, their hands are tied for 95% of their budget in terms of what they can spend. There are just things they have to, by law, spend money on, yep. Or they won't get the money. And so it's basically extortion, right? You get this commissioner with her board of whatever the hell, right? People overseeing education at the state level. And they say, look, we're taking this money in sales taxes, income taxes, or whatever, and we're going to give a decent portion of it back to each community based on this formula. But you got to do X, Y, and Z. And if you don't do X, Y, and Z, then you don't get the money. Yep. So, if that's not extortion, then what is? Right. And the purpose of it is equity. And that's why they take from places like District 68 and they give back less to them and give more to places like Providence or Central Falls or whatever.
Well, again, it's another argument for privatizing the system, right? If there's a school in Central Falls that, you know, can generate revenue because it's great and everybody from Pawtucket and Providence and all that flood into Central Falls to go to that school excels. Da, da, da. I mean, we've gone over this ad nauseum, you know, over and over, but now that being said, school choice obviously is the movement in the right direction. And I did read in the blog post, basically all I've read on her to get a quick overview of her is from Erica Sanzi's Good School Hunting blog, and she's a big fan. So I don't know if that means anything, but she did mention that she is I don't want to say she's pro school choice, but she does see the benefit of charter schools. So that is a move in the right direction, where charter schools are able to get private funding, to offset their expenses, as well as money that follows the kids from whatever district they come from. If that district chooses to pay the charter school, they don't always. So there, I guess that is a plus. Again, we'll see what comes of this, but
I think what's interesting too is where she comes from, right? So she comes from, I think she's the deputy commissioner
In
New York.
Yeah.
Whose education system is just a disaster.
Right.
One of the reasons I know about this and other libertarians who are listening is because Larry Sharp,
right,
who ran for governor of New York, made education a pretty big part of his platform. And if anyone actually saw him on Joe Rogan's show, which was an interesting episode to say the least, yeah, but they spent like an hour going back and forth about education. And it was a little bit of a frustrating exchange, but the bottom line is that he's basically saying how top heavy, the system is in New York, how it's loaded with unnecessary administration. And look, she's part of that administration. Yep. And so if that's where we're looking, for answers is to model, that system, I mean, I just,
Yeah.
I don't see it. I don't see it. I have an open mind. I definitely want to learn more about her, and maybe this is something we can kind of check back in on in the weeks ahead.
Sure.
And see what some of her ideas are. Obviously, she just stepped in. But for those of you listening out there, this is, whether we like it or not, this is a powerful position. The capacity of the Ed Commissioner to shape policy for every community in the state is enormous.
Yeah.
It's enormous. And we'll see what happens.
Yeah, just one thing I did know in that article, the blog post I did read, one of the criticisms, I guess, was from another article that Eric was referencing, and they quoted some statistics about test score increases or some metrics that they use to show an improvement. But as Erica pointed out in her article, well, that's kind of a bogus claim because they lowered the graduation standards or requirements in 2016 or something to that effect. I forget the date. I didn't skim the article yet, but for the information, but I thought that was interesting. Right. So they're using these metrics to boost her but they lowered the standard.
Right. It's like when you find out that the Red Sox hit 100 more home runs this year than they did last year. And then you find out they moved
the fence
in, 70 feet.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'm extremely skeptical. I think Erica does a great job with the blog, and she's extremely smart. And so, I take what she says very seriously. So I definitely will look into it more. But I'm very skeptical.
Yeah,
I'm extremely skeptical. I guess in conjunction with schools and talking about schools,
right.
Another big issue with schools, of course, will always be guns, gun laws. And this was the week of gun legislation hearings at the State House. All the yellow shirts and red shirts were out in full force
five red shirts
Tuesday night. Yeah, it was not very many. It wasn't very many, but there's a lot of gun legislation being proposed. And, I did have a chance to listen to all of the testimony, that is available on Capitol TV online. If you get just a little plug, if you want to go on there, check it out, listen to it. If you have a long car ride or whatever, it's great to listen to because there's a lot of great perspectives. And, I learned a lot listening to the sponsors of some of these bills. And when I say I learned a lot, I learned that there's very, very little. Very little reason or logic behind any of these bills.
Oh, it is.
And we're going to get into that right now. So, sure. But why don't you
one thing I thought was interesting. We've mentioned it, the red t-shirts. If for those that don't know, I believe it's Moms Demand Action or the Coalition Against Gun Violence wear red shirts. I think that's ironic.
It's very ironic. That's not the color you want to pick if you're trying to prove to people that you're not gun grabbing. 100 years
ago, there were people with red coats on that were trying to
The red coats, but then there's the other red too. I mean, there's the communist red.
Oh well, that's another good point.
Red's not a good color.
No,
I think that's what we're trying to say. Yeah. Red's a bad color.
But
bad choice.
Getting into the legislation, I've got a list of bills here that I pulled up. It was the whole gambit, right? So it was everything from assault weapons ban to magazine capacity ban to I hate using the term high capacity magazine because it's standard capacity magazine, but in their words, and again, same thing with assault weapon, right? That's another term, which I don't like to argue those semantics. I think they're irrelevant because even if we should be able to own quote unquote assault weapons or assault rifles in the actual, there is such a thing as an assault rifle, right?
Right.
So it has specific features. And yeah, we should be able to own that. So don't argue against terminology, argue against the ideas. Like it's in my mind anyway, but
yeah, they try to get you bogged down in jargon.
Yeah. Yeah. And a lot of even pro gun people will get caught up in that.
That's the,
Right. They're arguing semantics and it's irrelevant because you should have it, even if it is an assault weapon, like whatever they're describing.
Right.
It doesn't matter. So and then, schools. So we were talking. Well, let's talk about the schools first. So
there's
no guns in schools.
So one of the bills that really caught my eye, and I think this was Representative Ranglin Vassell's bill. This was the prohibiting firearms possession within 300 feet of a school grounds, except for peace officers. Is this a new thing? Peace officers. They're police officers.
No, well, actually,
right?
They should be called peace officers when they used to maintain peace, right?
Yep.
So we've moved from the idea of a peace officer into the idea of a law enforcement officer.
The peace officer is actually the more appropriate
acceptable
term.
A term, right?
Oh, okay.
And that's the role they should be filling.
All right,
maintaining peace between neighbors.
I'm showing my age a little bit here, I think. Anyway, so of course, nobody can carry a gun within 300 feet of a school unless, of course, you're a cop or a government agent of some kind or persons providing school security. I'm not exactly sure what that even means necessarily, because if you're not allowed to have they're saying no guns on school grounds. They're saying,
well, except for either a government agent, right?
So, like a resource officer with a gun.
Yeah, in Rhode Island, resource officers are cops in the local town. They just get detailed to become a resource officer, right? They go through special training, I'm assuming, and all that other stuff. But now, this to me sounds like private security, which interesting. I read an article probably months now about some schools in, I think it was Florida, that they're using hired security. But again, apparently that's okay.
And here's the thing: look, this in all of these bills really come down to one core issue, which is, I think it was Rep Canario in these hearings that really brought up a lot of these points, which were really great points, which is. Nobody who goes into a school and commits an act of gun violence is someone carrying a concealed carry permit. Okay. The kind of people that go out to get a concealed carry permit and go through that process, history has shown they're law abiding citizens. Okay. Someone who wants to go onto school grounds and commit a gun crime isn't going to stop at 300 feet because there's a law that says so. Some law-abiding citizen who's walking 50 feet by a school, if they're law-abiding, then what are you worried about?
It's an absolutely ridiculous...
it's stupid.
...thing. So a person who... say they enact this law. This law passes. No more concealed carry holders are allowed into the school. Even if you are a concealed carry holder and you want to go into a school and commit a mass shooting, is that going to stop you?
No.
No, it's not. So it's absolutely ridiculous.
It's ridiculous. Yep. And so, look, as someone who I brought this up before.
You're a non-gun guy.
I'm a non-gun guy because personally. Yep. And when I say I'm a non-gun guy, I mean in my own life. Yep. Meaning that because of my religious beliefs, I don't want to put myself in any position where I would be able to take another life. But knowing that, it's clear to me that I'm putting myself in a more dangerous position by taking that stance.
You've accepted that risk.
Right.
Yeah.
The idea that I would think that this was somehow less risky. if it wasn't a way more risky tack to take in terms of my approach to guns, then it wouldn't be... It wouldn't be a weird thing to do. It wouldn't be a spiritually advantageous thing to do in my mind. You know what I mean? It's like the idea that guns on school property, either in the hands of security or a parent or a teacher who is trained, wouldn't help prevent a mass shooting is fully crazy.
Yeah,
it's just wrong.
There are a couple of other arguments I had heard, in the discussions, right, or the testimony. And so one of them is, okay, you're a concealed permit holder. You're not allowed to go into the school with your weapon on you to pick up your kid or go for a meeting or whatever. So you've got to leave that outside the school. And in this case, it has to be at least 300 feet away. So that again, we've just discussed that. That's silly, right? For one, the person that is doing that is not the person you need to be worried about. And if they happen to be a person that you do need to be worried about, they're not going to pay attention anyway. That's what criminals do.
Right.
Murder is already illegal. Like, so if someone's intent on committing murder, telling them that you need to leave your gun outside is not going to stop them from doing that. So it's absolutely asinine.
And they're relying on the police to take care of these instances. And why are they relying on the police?
So,
because they've got guns.
So that's the other argument, right? So the police, the response time for the... As we know, we don't have personal bodyguard. Even if there's a cop in the building, for him to get to the shooter, there's time involved in there,
right?
So that's a situation. So So another argument, I believe that I heard the state police colonel mention this one, was that they don't want to show up on a scene where there's other armed people there.
Oh, right.
So what that's telling me is they rather have a person murdering people until they get there. He's advocating for people to be murdered is what he's
rather saying. than the possibility that they might
that they have to deal with somebody who's armed, a good guy with a gun that they might have to deal with in order to stop this person from murdering more children. So they're advocating for the murder of children is what I'm hearing when he says that. He says, we don't want you to stop this person until we get there. So because there may be a situation where if you stopped him and we come in and we see you with a gun, that we're going to shoot you.
Yeah, right.
Okay, so you've got one, the good person dies, but, you know, you'd rather have, you know, 30 more children die, you know? So,
like I said, it's fully crazy.
It's insanity.
And completely devoid of logic.
Now, just on the logical side of that, if I'm a concealed carry permit holder and I'm carrying a weapon and I defend myself or who's around me in that situation, I know as a concealed carry holder to put my gun away until authority, once the threat is neutralized, you put your gun away until the authorities get there. You don't keep brandishing it and all that, right? Or you put yourself in a situation where you can let other people know that you're carrying, right?
Right.
So these are steps that you take, and that's not to be said that there's not a risk that you may have what is often referred to as blue on blue, good guy on good guy situation. But that's a risk. I'd rather have that risk than have a maniac murdering children until the cops get there.
Right.
It's absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah. I mean, if I'm in a school and I'm carrying a gun and I see the cops show up, then the first thing I'm going to do at that point is, you know, especially if there's no need for me to be holding the gun,
you've already put it away. You've already put it in its holster, or you've gotten rid of it. You've put it in a safe spot.
You know, look, and like I said, like I have personal beliefs. I would be one of those teachers that didn't want to carry a gun, right? That would be me. But then again, I'd have some conflict with that because now I'm imposing my personal spiritual beliefs, on the children in my class. And that'd be a tough position for me to be in because I recognize that that's a less safe approach,
right?
You know, and I can make that decision for myself,
yeah.
But you know, they want to make this decision for everybody.
So then there's another issue where I believe the colonel was saying this, or other law enforcement I've heard say this, is that, well, the average concealed carrier holder is not well trained enough to take care of the situation, which again, if you've decided to arm yourself, you've more than likely sought out a level of training to be able to respond to it. You've taken on that. Again, I've been shooting since I was 17 years, no, younger than that, 16 years old. I bought my first firearm when I was 18. You know, I was in the military for 11 years. I was an infantryman. I was a sniper. I've done a lot with firearms, right? I worked as 2 years as a security contractor in Iraq, protecting civilians.
You know more about guns than any of these people forgot.
I've also been a physical security consultant where I've advised very large government organizations and corporations on how to protect themselves from violent attacks. So I know what I'm talking about when I say, I'm not trying to inflate myself here, but I know what I'm saying when I say this, right?
Right.
So I've been at ranges, and this happened at the Warren Ronan Gun Club many years ago. I was there with a friend. We were shooting I might have said this before in the podcast, but I'll say it again for those who have not heard it. We were shooting, and they had these this target set up, and it had five or six plates on it. It was six plates, steel plates, little, you shoot it once and it falls down, and then you reset them and they all pop back up, right? So I was shooting, and at the time I was shooting a Sig Sauer P220, which is 45. I believe I had a 7-round magazine. Shoot six targets. I have one round left, right? One shot, one target, each goes down. It's not far. It's like maybe 10 yards. So these two other guys come in and they start shooting, right? So letting them take, going back and forth, taking turns. And this guy starts shooting and he's got a Glock. He's got his 15-round mag. I think it was 15-round mag. And he's shooting and he's changing magazines in the process of shooting, right? So there's six targets. He's changing. I'm like, wow, you know? So I would just start talking back and forth. And I come to find out the guy's a cop. I believe it was a Warren cop, actually. I said, oh, interesting. right? So the buddy he was there with had just flunked out of the police academy for marksmanship, failed his marksmanship test. So this guy brought him to the range to teach him how to shoot. So when he went back through the academy, he would pass.
Right.
So for you to say that the cops are the best trained, again, I've been around the block enough to know that's just simply not the case.
No. And look,
That's not to say there aren't cops that are highly trained that are as avid shooter as any other gun enthusiast or gun a professional that carries a firearm, but there are a lot of cops who it's their job, right? They don't go to shoot on the weekends. They qualify whatever the required limit is once or twice a year at the range, and they shoot their qualification and they're done. Like they put their gun away and they don't, you know, so. It's an absolutely ridiculous notion that a civilian can't be as well trained or if not trained better.
Right.
You know, so.
And look, here's the other thing that's interesting about this in regards to cops is all of these people presenting these bills. It's like it's clearly that the only people they want to be able to carry guns and wield that power are cops and law enforcement and government. And my question is, where are the Black Lives Matters protesters? Protesting all of these bills, in a sense. You know what I mean? I mean, you'd think that bills that want to consolidate all gun ownership in the state into the hands of law enforcement would draw some attention there, and it doesn't, which I find very interesting. And the other thing that I thought was interesting, and this kind of goes to the whole sensationalism aspect of this whole thing, is this Representative Caldwell, who I think put in three different bills. And during her testimony, she, you know, gave this very personal story, very Lofton Asensio-esque in terms of,
I heard that,
you know, trying to convey that, you know, the story about when she got a text message from the school that her son went to about a lockdown, and it was the scariest 11 seconds of her life, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm sure it was incredibly scary. But then she talks about how this was the number one issue that people in her district were talking about when she was knocking on doors, and that the first door that she knocked on was a mother who said, "I'm terrified about gun violence. I want you to do something about gun violence. This is the number one issue for me." Okay. Do you know how many violent crimes there were last year in East Greenwich, which is where she's a rep? Okay. Violent crimes in East Greenwich last year, 6. You know how many of those were murders?
0.
0. There wasn't one murder of any kind, let alone a gun crime. Okay. There was 0 murders, 1 rape, 0 robberies in East Greenwich last year. Okay. In terms of violent crime. Yep. Okay. So let's put it in another perspective. Your chances of being involved in a violent crime, and this is any violent crime in Rhode Island, is 1 in 431. That's a pretty long, those are pretty long odds, right? In East Greenwich, in her district, it's 1 in 2,183. So you tell me, I'm sorry, I don't buy it. If people are really this scared about gun violence in East Greenwich, either it's the media drumming this up, or the politicians drumming this up. But I'll tell you what, it's not based in reality.
No.
It's just not a real threat. Does it mean it can't happen? No, it could happen. But I'll tell you what, if it did happen, the one thing that would minimize the death toll the most would be a gun on the scene in the hands of someone who knew how to use it and was able to neutralize, for lack of a better word, the threat.
Yep. A couple of points there. Just talking about that, the one telling the story. Maybe two couple things there. One, she's just blatantly lying, which probably is the case. But two,
it's possible.
Maybe she had a targeted walk list of only anti-gun people, and she decided to go to that house first so she wouldn't be caught in a lie. Maybe that could.
I mean, look, I could even.
They know who their people are and what their issues are.
They do, and that's the political science of it too.
Yeah, yeah.
But look, I wouldn't even mind if the story was that the woman she was talking to was just, "I don't like guns."
Yeah, exactly.
But no, it was, "I'm worried, terrified of gun violence."
So,
and it's just, it, so that just goes doesn't
to the statistics
exist
of gun shootings in schools, right? Like, it's a statistical anomaly. It's a virtually, I hate to use this word, non-event, because there is a tragic, horrific component to this, right? Anytime a child is murdered, it's just your heart breaks. But the reality is the chances of it happening are virtually non-existent.
I think you're pretty much, there's a better chance you'll be bitten by a shark.
Right. I believe so. And I've done some research on your child is more likely to get killed on the way to school than they are once they're in school. Being in school is one of the safest places that they can be. They're actually in more danger outside of the school.
That is 1,000% true. The school is the safest place in any town in the state. That is just the fact. So look, it's frustrating because it's hard not to feel like they're using instances like what happened in New Zealand or what happened in Florida at Stoneman Douglas, real tragedies. But at the same time, your chances of being shot in a school shooting is so minuscule. Which doesn't make it not important. It doesn't mean that you shouldn't, prepare for it or guard against it.
Right.
But you don't prepare for it by taking away defense mechanisms, or taking away the rights of people to defend themselves.
That's right.
You know, because you don't want to defend the school. You're going to make sure that people can't defend themselves. It's just asinine, and I really hope that the House votes this down. It's just wrong. Yeah. It's totally illogical. Not that this is my main problem, but it's also completely unconstitutional, which, is not my main issue, but it's a point to be made.
As a libertarian, I don't use the Constitution as my measure of morality.
Right, me either.
Like, rights are inherent, and the Constitution is irrelevant when it comes to rights. Now, it was designed to protect those rights, not grant the rights, which people often confuse. But it's, I hate to use the Constitution as the argument of why I should be able to do this.
No.
I should be able to do this because I have a right to protect my own life and my family.
Right.
Life.
It's a tool.
And my life, not only from criminals, but from tyrannical government as well.
Absolutely.
Which is another point, and that goes into some of the other issues or other legislation that's being proposed, is, banning, again, quote unquote, high capacity. I'm using a list here from the NRA's website, and I'm not an NRA fan. I believe they are too, giving on some of their issues. I prefer Gun Owners of America, but anyway, they had a nice list here. So
that worked.
But the way it's written, I'm wondering if they copy and paste this legislation. But Bill 5739 prohibits sale, possession of a feeding device holding more than 10 ammunition rounds, which should be 10 rounds of ammunition.
Right,
but. So again, right. So that was something I noticed. One of the first people that spoke they talked about 3D printed guns, I believe, completely ignorant of the subject. Like they didn't even use the right words, referred to things incorrectly. I mean, it's common, right? So,
and it's probably on purpose.
Right.
I mean,
but I digress. So getting back to this, high capacity, again, quote unquote, high capacity magazines, and what they refer to as assault rifles or assault weapons. Those should be legal, right? They are, but they should always be legal because, again, I might have to defend myself against government, right?
You might,
and cops who are exempt from these rules,
right?
But all of a sudden now they are, better armed than and in a position to, enslave the citizenry.
Look, it's very common sense. It's a mutually assured destruction idea, okay?
Exactly right.
When one country has nuclear weapons, like in 1945, there's really no detriment to dropping a couple on another country, which is exactly what happened. The moment another country developed nuclear weapons, that was it. There hasn't been another nuclear weapon used in war, in conflict, on other people ever since. Yep. And I think it's the same thing with a tyrannical government. The idea basically is that if the more you take firearms away from the citizenry, the more tyrannical, slowly over time, the government will become, until the point where they can basically do whatever they want because they know that there's no opportunity for resistance. Does that mean they're going to pound down your door with an AK? It could, but even if it's not. Who cares?
And the same applies to criminal element, right?
Right.
They know you're not armed. They are going to break in your house because there's very little chance of resistance, right?
Exactly.
Or at least of lethal resistance.
Right.
And one of the scary, again, the scary things, going back to the colonel's testimony, the scary things about this, they talk about, they're advocating for this. Why do you want us disarmed?
Right.
That's the question. What are your intentions? They'll say, well, the safety of my officers. I don't give a I'll bleep that. I don't care about the safety of your officers.
It's a passionate issue.
Yeah. Your officers took on the risk of this job and they're armed. So let them protect themselves. You know, it's not my, I shouldn't have to give up my rights for the safety of your people or whatever perceived safety risk you think you might have.
And look, there's plenty of police officers who feel the complete opposite. And I think Rep Canario is one of them who mentioned he was in law enforcement for a long time. I think that, you know, and I tend to feel like in my experience, I was a volunteer firefighter for 4 years in a rural community in the state. My sense was in working with the police up there was that they were all very, very pro Second Amendment. Mm-hmm. When you get into the urban areas and the cities, it's a totally different story all of a sudden. Right. Look, the police people, I think people falsely look at the police like a security force or a crime prevention force. And they're not. They're there to enforce laws and crimes after they happen. They're not there to prevent crime from taking place. That's, you know, the thing that helps prevent crime from taking place is personal protection.
Right. Well, again, the very label of that profession is a first responder. Right. They're responding.
Right.
You know, a fireman doesn't show up to a house before it's on fire. He shows up, he responds to a fire.
Can you imagine firemen? Look, I was a firefighter for 4 years. There was not one firefighter in this state that I ever met that would go to the state house and advocate that people not have fire extinguishers in their houses.
Right. That's an excellent, excellent point.
And that's exactly what this is.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, no. We don't trust you to put out the fire. Let the professionals do it. No, that's not the point. The point is that if you wait 5, 6, 7 minutes for the fire truck to get there, lay the hose, connect to the hydrant, run the lines, get water on the house is already fully engulfed. And at that point, you're basically just gonna try to put it out as quickly as you can and hope that, you know, maybe part of the house is salvageable. Yeah. It's like saying you don't want smoke detectors in homes.
Yeah.
It's the same exact thing. Yeah. And so
well, their excuse will be, well, a smoke detector and a fire extinguisher are not deadly weapons used to kill people. I've heard that often, right? But the thing is, the reason I need a gun is to kill somebody that's trying to kill
you're
me.
You're to save your life. It's like the fire extinguisher is there to save your life.
Yeah.
I mean, look, unfortunately, you fight a fire with a fire extinguisher and you fight another person with a gun with a gun. If you want to stop that person, if you're someone who's very religious, very spiritual like me, and not to say that you can't be spiritual or religious and feel differently, but if you're like me, then you're putting your faith in something that's completely outside yourself.
Right.
I would never impose that on somebody else. That is a personal choice. And I want people to have the right to defend themselves if they feel that that's what they want to do. Yep. And that's what this comes down to.
So I thought another one that was interesting moving along is the age bill, right? So they want to increase the age to buy a long gun, be it a rifle or a shotgun, from 18 to 21. Right. I thought that was interesting, right? I guess the rationale behind that is you're not old enough to be able to, but at 18 years old, and again, this is kind of cliche, but you're old enough to join the military and go die for your country. Right. You're old enough to, smoke cigarettes.
Yep.
You know, I think, did they change the name?
No, cigarettes are still 18.
But you're old enough to do a lot of things at 21. You get married, I presume, right?
Like, absolutely.
There's a lot of things you can do at 18, but you can't have a gun until you're 21. But the funny thing is the reverse of that, right? I believe it was Cicilline that proposed, we don't talk federal stuff here, but he proposed legislation, I believe, advocating to lower the voting age to 16.
Yeah, he signed on to it.
So you're not capable of protecting yourself from 18 on, but you can, vote for people that could completely, obliterate our entire society.
Right? Yeah. How about this one? You're not old enough to buy a gun at 18, but you're old enough to vote for someone who might want to use even more powerful guns to go kill poor people
in other countries.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's ridiculous.
Or in our own.
It's insane. It's insane. It's fully crazy. Look, here's the thing. We've decided as a society, and this is the analogy that I use, because this has come up with the voting thing. And at what age, what is the age of adulthood, right? What is the age of consent? That's really what we're talking about here, is the ability to consent, right? And to make rational decisions. Now, there's some science that says that your brain isn't really fully functioning until you're 25, right? So look, so if anything, you know, if you want to use that as a rationale for raising the age of things, then I can at least listen to that rationale. But we've decided that at 18, you're old enough to sign a contract.
Yep.
To me, that is the bar. The fact that you have the ability to sign on the dotted line for anything, including selective service, mm-hmm. including volunteering for the military. And look, the person who proposed this bill made a point to say, look, if you're an active member of the U.S. military, then you can purchase a gun. Right. Okay. But the point is that I still had to sign up for the draft when I was 18. Yeah. Just because they haven't used it doesn't mean they can't use it. Okay. So the fact that I can be called up at any time, let's say we go to war with Venezuela and they decide, for whatever reason, we're going to have a draft.
Yep.
I don't know that that's not going to happen. Right. So the fact that an 18-year-old can get called into the military at any time, to me, right there, that negates this or any age restriction, whether it's cigarettes, alcohol, gambling, whatever it is, it should all be 18, if anything. And the idea that was the reason they lowered the voting age to 18 in the first place, was the kids were going off to die in Vietnam who are 18 years old and they couldn't even vote, right? So until they lower the draft age to 16, you know, as far as I'm concerned, sorry. Not going to happen.
Just if we can, real quick, the couple of other ones that kind of stand out to
there's
me.
There's so many.
I know. It's
insane. Once. Everyone wants to get on the gun train, man.
So the other one was the quote unquote, assault weapons ban was, which are not properly registered. So we talk about registration. I'll tie this in with the whole serial number thing as well, with the what they refer to as ghost guns. And
is that the 3D guns?
3D printed gun. John and I think it was when John was in, we talked about that from Cindy Coyne, who proposed a form of cop. Again, go figure, right? So the whole registration thing, right? What is the purpose of a registration anyway? It's so they can track something and they can come get it if they want to take it away.
Right.
Like, it doesn't stop a crime.
No.
You know, Me having a car registered doesn't stop me from mowing down, you know, people standing at a bus stop. Like registration doesn't prevent anything. So it's a way for them to track it. And so when they further their agenda, they can come and get it and they know who has what, and they'll come in.
That's certainly a part of it. I think obviously they also would use a registration to, you know, find out who used the gun or who owned the gun that was used in a crime. Let's say the person escapes, gets away. Obviously that's their rationale, right? But
again, the crime's already been committed.
It's already been committed. And now you're just talking about trying to find the person responsible. But at the same time, is that worth putting people on a list? I'm a little leery. I know my history. I'm leery of putting people on lists.
Yeah.
Law abiding people
right.
on lists. Because look, those lists can be used any which way by a very powerful government. And you know, I look right now, you might not think the government's a danger, but who knows who's going to be in charge of it 20 years from now? You don't know.
Right. Finally, the idea of the whole build your own or 3D printed.
Oh, this drove me nuts. Now, listen to this.
The fact is, for one, the files, the rep, whoever was introducing this, said something about you have to buy them. They're for free. They're already out there. The cat is out of the bag. Like, this is, you can't put this genie back in the bottle. I'm full of cliches here. It's a done deal, right? So if I own a 3D printer, I can print it. You cannot stop me. there's no way for you to know that I've printed this gun unless I've used it. And then again, the crime has already been committed.
But wait, Mike, you might go to the public library and use the 3D printer at the public library to print a gun. I mean, I've never heard anything so ridiculous in my life.
The whole idea of 3D printed guns is not for actual use. It's an idea, right? It's proving a point. And again, the technology will get, because with, you know, 3D printed gun is going to be very you know, risky.
Yeah, right.
to use.
Haven't they shown they don't even really work?
Yeah, some of them don't. I mean, again, we can get into the technicals of it, but the fact is they're developing and that, well, there are metal 3D printers that will do metal now. So you can make their big thing is about, smuggling it through a metal detector. But again, the ammunition is metal, you know?
Right, right.
So, yeah. Now, if you want to make a gun, you know, out of plastic, legitimately, there are laws already that has to contain, so much metal within it and you know, blah, blah, blah. So it goes on and on. Same thing with, building guns yourself. You can manufacture your own firearms if you CNC machines are cheap. You can buy, either a manual milling machine and lathe and convert it to CNC. Their kits to do that is relatively cheap. You can buy even a full-on CNC machine. Tormach is a big company that makes CNC machines that are, they call it a personal CNC. Again, it's not cheap. It's a couple thousand bucks, but it's within the realm of, we're not talking hundreds of thousands of dollars anymore. It's come to, So again, if I have a block of aluminum and a CNC machine or even a manual mill, who is to say that I can't build this in my garage?
Nobody.
Without anybody ever knowing. And yeah, so it's just absolutely ridiculous.
Again,
the enforcement of it is moronic.
Again, if people with malintent, they're going to find a way.
They're going to do bad.
They just are. Yeah. People have to be able to protect themselves. Yeah. They just do.
So speaking of stupid laws.
And
that's enough about the guns. We beat that one.
We can touch on this one quickly. This is just a fun one. Yeah. And that is,
fun, but stupid, from our favorite.
So
mouth breather, Susan Donovan of
no
District
more,
69.
Yeah. No more releasing balloons, guys. That's it. If you're at a wedding, I've been to a few weddings. No more mass releasing of balloons. We're going to impose a fine. I think it was a $500 fine or something like that. Look, we already have laws in the books for littering. Do we not?
Yes.
So then why is this necessary? You know, I mean, obviously if you release something into the air, that's going to pop and come back down. You know that that's littering. It's littering. Okay. Now, it could go on the ocean and it can cause all different problems, whatever. I'm not denying that any of this is true.
No.
Okay. But
again, the severity of it may be questionable. Like, how big of an issue is it? But the fact is, it could be an issue, right? It could very well be.
I don't disagree that it's littering.
Yeah. Right.
But why, again, and here's my thing is when it comes down to, I like to find out what the people's rationale is when they propose these things, because her rationale isn't just littering, right? It's that it harms wildlife. Okay. So let me get this straight. We're going to fine people for mass releasing balloons because they might harm wildlife. Okay. If that's your rationale, how long is it until we ban hunting and fishing in this state? Recreational hunting and fishing. Because if you're worried about harming wildlife, I guarantee you that hunting and fishing in this state does a lot more to harm wildlife.
How many people hit deer with cars?
Yeah, no more cars.
Hunting, I guess you could argue that it's an intentional thing and you're going to harvest the, the animal. And
I guess.
You know, how many squirrels do you see squished on the road when you're driving down the street? Should that be a fine?
Right. And of course not. And obviously what she's saying is, well, you don't need to release balloons into the air. You need to drive your car down the road. But okay, I get the point.
Yeah.
But
that's why you advocate for saying don't release balloons in the air. Use your bully pulpit and your position as a legislator to say, this is an issue to all my constituents. Please don't release balloons because it does this. Advocate for a solution that doesn't involve government force to get people to stop doing it.
Yeah, and you're also encouraging people to rat on each other, right? This is like a North Korean type philosophy. I go to someone's wedding, I'm an invited guest at a wedding, and they have a mass release of balloons, and I'm going to report them to the police. This is what she said she would do. She said if she was at a wedding and there was a mass release of balloons, that she would report it. Not try to convince them not to do it. And then even if they did do it, she would report the people that just invited her to their wedding to the police because those balloons might go into the ocean and harm wildlife. Right. Now, look.
Guess who's not getting invited to my birthday party?
Oh, absolutely not.
Not that I'm releasing balloons.
I released 3 balloons on my way here. Just for fun.
Just because.
Well, I like to put my problems in them. I like to write my problems down, and I put them in balloons, and then I intentionally release them into the air.
Right.
And then, you know what? Then it becomes some sea turtles problem.
Yeah. No, you know what I'm waiting I'm for? Kidding. Is a ban on messages in a bottle.
Well, sure. What? A dolphin could swallow that bottle.
That's very true.
Look, and here's the thing. I think, as a libertarian...
Wasn't that a sidebar? Seinfeld episode with the whale and the blowhole?
Oh, the golf ball.
Oh, yeah. The golf ball. I'm sorry. That's
the,
right.
The sea was angry that day, my friends. That's right. Easy, big fella. No, look, I'm against littering. As a libertarian, to me, littering is a property violation. It's a property crime. So, look, I'm on the same page with the littering thing. But then again, if it's littering, then if you want to just add it to the list of things that are considered littering, then fine. This is clearly just, she read something somewhere at some conference or something about this. This is clearly copied legislation from somewhere else. And it's, you know, they try to get attention with these things. It's a totally unnecessary piece of legislation. They're going to have to spend time on it, debating it, all this crap.
Because there are no other problems in the state.
It's a waste of time. And they want to be a full-time legislature. And this is the stuff they're spending time on now. It's insane.
You know what I wish? I wish we could get to a point where this is all we did have to worry about.
Sure.
That would be nice.
Sure.
But again,
just for fun.
Another libertarian solution to this problem is private property, right? If you litter on my private property, you violated my property rights. You need to make me whole. You know, whether that's paying me for my time that I went to go pick up the popped balloons off my lawn, or if it damaged my lawnmower, I don't even know, you know, whatever. You know, maybe, it killed my dog, right. You know, and you need to make me whole. That's valid, right? But why is the money going to the government?
Yeah, how's that going to help you bring your dog back or pay for your, you know, pet services or your doctor, your vet bills? You know, if a balloon falls on your property, it could have came from anywhere. I mean, it could have came from Massachusetts, right? And you're not going to know who released it.
No.
So all this is,
well, that's the other,
it's some other weird way to grab money.
Yeah, and the enforcement aspect of it, right? Again, they're hoping to use people to rat on each other.
That's the only way.
That's the only way. The enforcement, or, you know, a cop happens to be driving by, I guess, when you let go of your string. What happens at, like, the 4th of July parade in Bristol, where she's from, and a kid, you know, your son or daughter, you know, has their hands full of ice cream and slips and the string goes off and the balloon goes up in the air. Is there a provision for that?
Well, in this, so
is this intentional
in
release?
In this bill, it's intentional release. I think it's just mass release of balloons. Now, I have how many balloons is mass? I don't know. I think if you're in the woods and you let a balloon go and it gets stuck in the trees and no one's around,
was there a balloon released?
I mean, you're going to have to report yourself. Yeah. The tree herders from Lord of the Rings are going to have to report you to Lord Saruman here from Bristol.
So just to go at the person that introduced this, she's useless. She's a useless legislator. Like, she does nothing, you know? And again, campaign finance wise, like, she's gotten money from pretty, you know, the typical machine. The same people are backing her.
She's super. Yeah, look, she's right in with Sheldon Whitehouse.
Oh,
and, the whole gang of them. It's a big, big, incestuous. I don't even want to say.
Yeah.
I'm going to be nice.
We'll let the.
So anyway, let's let that float away. that brings us to the close of our podcast. We hope you enjoyed it. Once again, you can find our podcast on any major podcast platform. That's iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Play. Please subscribe. This way, every time we put out a new episode, it automatically pops up on your podcast feed. You don't have to go looking for it. It'll pop up there. Leave us a review. It really helps with ratings and things like that. Otherwise, you can find us on Facebook at LibertyRI. You can also find us on Twitter at LibertyRI, or on the website, libertyri.com. Leave us a message, contact us. Is there an issue that maybe a local issue we don't know about that you really want us to talk about? Let us know. Give us comments, give us feedback, constructive criticism, whatever. We love all of it. And then, of course, you go to the website. We're trying to put more and more content on there as we go forward. You can also email us individually. You can email Mike at libertyri.com or Eric at libertyri.com. We look forward to pumping out some more of these episodes in the future, and we'll see you then.
Take care.
You've been listening to the Rhode Island Liberty Report. Be sure to check us out at libertyri.com.